Hey, what's up, everybody? How's it going out there on YouTube, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you are? We got people on TikTok here. We got 132 people over here on TikTok watching the show. So that's great. We got nobody on YouTube watching the show right now. People will eventually. If you're a person in the future watching it, hello. I'm wearing a tank top today. Sun's out, guns out. Heat wave in Los Angeles. It's hot, baby. It's been hot. I got a little fan on in this room that I'm hoping won't fuck up the audio for this episode, but it's been hot out here. I went and did my duty to my union today. I went and picketed at the Warner Brothers lot. That was fun. Walked around in the heat, ate a popsicle. There was a guy going around misting people. He was like, "Would you like a mist?" And I accepted mist from this gentleman. Several times. I got sprayed with a little misty mist several times. It was perfect. It was delicious. And guess who was there? I'm watching right now season 2 of The Bear. I'm in the middle of watching it. It's a great show. If you don't watch The Bear, fantastic show on Hulu. Can't recommend it enough. I'm not doing paid promo for them. This is not scabbing. They didn't pay me to say this. If they did, I would have said, you can shove it. You can shove that right up your bum because I'm not a scab, but I do like The Bear. And Jeremy Allen White, the bear himself, was striking with me, was picketing with me at the WB lot. I was walking down the sidewalk and then Jeremy Allen White walked by me and I went, ah! And I kept walking and pretended like I didn't see him, pretended like he was nothing. I just cool guyed him. And I talked about this in a TikTok video today, but that is sort of what I do when I see a TV or a movie famous out in public is I just cool guy them and I don't bother them and I pretend like I don't know who they are. Okay, that's my move. That's my MO. Look, that's what I do. I didn't take any photos. I didn't bother the guy. You can do what you need to do. If you need to go up to Jeremy Allen White when you see him and be like, "I really like The Bear. Your work is really important to me." That's all. That's fine. A few people did. I'll tell you this. I did walk behind Jeremy Allen White a little bit. It wasn't on purpose. There was just a little stretch there where we wound up walking like together-ish, and I was walking like 5 feet behind him, and I sort of intentionally was like, "Hey, there's nothing wrong with me just being behind the bear. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not bothering him. I can walk behind the bear." And so I did walk behind Jeremy Allen White for a little bit, but I didn't. And I watched, I observed as several people would walk by and say, "Hey, man, thank you for being here." And he would go, "Yeah, of course." You know, a few people stopped, shook his hand, took selfies, stuff like that. He was very gracious, amenable. I'm going to say this, and I've said this before on my TikTok channel. I said this before on the podcast. Oh, shit, I just said that word. You can say hi to me if you see me in public. I'm not Jeremy Allen White. I'm a D-list internet famous. I still get very excited when people say hi to me in public. And there just is a big difference between me and Jeremy Allen White, okay? There's a big difference. Here's the difference. At the WB lot today, every single person walking knew who he was, and it was obvious. And most of the people were, like, not bothering him. But every person that walked by him, like, you could see it on their face that they knew who he was. You could hear people talking about him, not around him. They were like, did you see the guy? And, like everyone knew who he was. I've been recognized at one time when I was picketing. I was picketing like 2 weeks ago at Universal, and one person stopped me and we took a selfie together. And so that's a bit, and no one else noticed. No one else was like, "Why is that guy taking a photo with that guy?" They just figured like we were friends. Like we were just buddies who bumped into each other, and he was like, "Oh, let's let the internet know that we saw each other." Like nobody else picketing was like, "Oh God, that guy's really bothering Austin Archer." Nobody else knew who I was. So I still really like when you come up to me. But if everyone there who knew who Jeremy Allen White was and liked his work on The Bear wanted to stop him and talk to him, he would not be able to do what he was there to do. He would not be able to picket. He would not be able to be a worker amongst workers. It would ruin his day. So that's why I'm like, leave the TV and the movie famouses alone. Unless there's like an opening where like you approaching won't create a mob approaching them is my take. That's my take. I don't know. Maybe Jeremy Allen White likes when people say hi to him. But there were like paparazzos at this picket taking photos of Jeremy Allen White. I knew that because I was walking 5 feet behind him. And there was a paparazzo who like popped out and he was like, Jeremy, Jeremy. And like was. He did not say Austin, Austin. Because the paparazzo, of course, has no idea who the fuck I am. And that's right. But like. That's just, you know, so you can say hi to me, but the paparazzos aren't. I have not ever, there are no pop shots of me, okay? So you can say hi to small level internet famouses, TV and movie famouses. Maybe just like take it into your heart and be like, I like that guy. I like her work. And then tell your friends later, I saw that person from that TV show and I like them. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Jeremy Allen White really likes everybody coming up to him and telling him how great the bear is. And maybe I should have just tapped him on the shoulder and been like, hey, hey, man, thanks for being here. And the bear's great. That's my Jeremy Allen White story. Let's get into the show. There's a lot of things that I want to talk about today. The title of this episode is The Connective Tissue Between Intelligence and Morality. Is that smarmy enough for you? I'm making these YouTube video essays now, and I like that YouTube video essays always have these like really like heady philosophical titles, and so I kind of I like coming up with those titles that are all like, ooh, we're in the connective tissue between intelligence and morality. The idea for this episode has been I think I'm probably going to actually make a video essay about this topic, but I thought I'd start out with a more loose format, just doing an episode of the show where I'm just sort of speaking off the top of the dome. But the idea for this episode came to me. I was talking to a friend outside of an AA meeting recently, and she was talking to me about this like period of her life where she kind of got a case of the fuckets, and She said that like she had just moved to Los Angeles, and I guess she saw some video of Martin Shkreli. You know that guy, Martin Shkreli, that like terrible person who bought up all of that like AIDS medication and then hiked the price of it up so that he could get rich. And he's just like a piece of shit. Like he was like buying like lots of pharmaceutical medicine up and like the patents to things, I think. And then like jacking up the price. Terrible person, Martin Shkreli. I'm pretty sure he went to jail for it too. Bad guy. But she was talking about how like it was before he got busted. It was before shit hit the fan. And she was talking about watching a video of him like buying this gold plated record from the Wu-Tang Clan. And it was like their gold plated record that they were like auctioning off, and Martin Shkreli bought it. And she was like, that sucks so much that that guy owns that. And that guy's like such a terrible person and that he owns that. And she had this idea. She was like, maybe I'm just going to be bad. Maybe like there's no point in trying to be a good person, and maybe I'll just be bad and I'll just do what Martin Shkreli's doing. And I'll just like, you know, like play the game like a piece of shit, and I'll win because I'm smart enough to do that, because I know enough and I have a good enough brain that I know I can see the angles and I could see how I could manipulate the game in my favor. And she was talking about this, and she said, I honestly think that when you're a really smart person, it's really hard to be good because you're capable of seeing all of the different ways that you could manipulate the game in your favor and that you could, you know, basically like cheat to get ahead. And initially I was like, oh, I know what you mean. And I know I recognize the emotional place that she was coming from, that it's like, yeah, sometimes in the world, when you're trying genuinely to be a decent human being who like values honesty and truth, and you see all these people who are just like liars and grifters and con artists getting ahead and like making tons of money and being really successful, it can be like, well, what's the point in trying to be good? Why am I even bothering trying to be honest? Like, what is the point of this? And I relate to that emotional space that she was in. I remember even like a while ago, I was watching The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City because I watch that show sometimes because I'm from Salt Lake City and like that's the only Real Housewives show I watch. But like it always strikes me that like all of these women are doing pretty well. They're all like pretty well off. And all these women on all these Real Housewives shows are like wealthy, but they're all like so emotionally maladapted. Like they're all like full grown ass adults in their 40s and 50s who have terrible communication skills and terrible emotional intelligence and like are just narcissists and like mean people. And that's why people watch the show, is because they're just like mean, rude, selfish people fighting. But they're all like doing well. They're all like successful in life. And it's like, that's crazy that all of these people who are so bad at, you know, successfully communicating through conflict and successfully navigating conflicts are this wealthy. And I got what my friend was saying, but as we were talking, I was thinking more about what she said, and I was like, is that true? Is it true that like these people, the Martin Shkreli's and the Andrew Tates and, you know, even to a certain extent, like the Ben Shapiro's and the Matt Walsh's and the Steve Crowder's, the, you know, like, is it true that like they possess a certain level of intelligence and that they're using their intelligence to like get ahead and to scam their audience? And like, to a certain extent, yes, yes. Like it takes a certain amount of intelligence to draw up a scheme, to get scheming, to decide I'm going to be a schemer and I'm going to go out and get scheming, to draw up a scheme and then to carry out that scheme, to successfully hatch that scheme and like, and to like follow through and bring the plan to fruition. It's you drew up the plan of how to rob the bank and you successfully robbed the bank. Like that doesn't take a zero level of intelligence. Like you had to carry out the plan, the beginning, middle, and end. Like, so to a certain extent, like, yeah, you saw the angles, you saw the ways that you could manipulate your audience, you saw the ways that you could manipulate the market or whatever, and the ways that you could take advantage of, you know, gullible consumers, and you struck and you were successful at that. That takes a certain level of intelligence. I also think it just takes a certain amount of just like sheer audacity and balls to just be like, I'm going for it. I'm gonna be a scammer, and I'm gonna hope that my confidence level is high enough that no one, like a Sam Bankman-Fried, to just be like, I'm going for it. I'm doing a Madoff. I'm doing Bernie Madoff. Like I'm doing a full-on Ponzi scheme. I'm going to convince wealthy people to invest in this nothing idea, and I'm going to like just build a nothing company and hope that nobody catches on. So and honestly, like, I don't know if Sam Bankman-Fried has much intelligence. I think with the Sam Bankman-Frieds and the Bernie Madoffs, it's like all audacity. It's all audacity and very little intelligence, because it's like you weren't able to just think like, what happens? What's the end game here? What happens when people ask for their money back? What happens when people are like, hey, so you've been telling me that my investment has been turning a 20% profit. Can I pull that out? And you're like, I don't have any of it because I spent it all and my company's not real and I don't actually have any of your money invested into anything real. Like they weren't able to like think that far. It was just all audacity. It was just all like, I'm just going to sort of carry myself like I know what the stock market is. Bernie Madoff just like, I'm just going to pretend like I know how stocks work, and I'm just going to carry myself with this sort of like confidence, and no one's going to question it. And for a long time they didn't, but it's like, Bernie, what was the long game here? At some point you had to turn this company over to somebody. You had to like retire and like, let's say that Bernie Madoff never got found out. Let's say that like Bernie Madoff was able to just like give returns to people here and there throughout his career, but the whole like, you know, housing market crash never happened. So, because like what happened to Bernie Madoff was like all of his investors all came to him at once and were like, hey, we all need our money back. And he was like, I can't do that because the company's fake. But if one or two investors at a time is coming and asking for a payout, he can afford to do that. But like, play the tape out, Bern. Play it out. What happens when you're 70 and you're like, I'm done working now, and your sons, who did not know that the company was fake, it's time for them to take over the company, and you have to be like, so listen, my boys, my dear children, I'm going to let you take over the company. You got to just know something real quick. It's not real. Like, it, to me, I'm like, that's not very smart. But like, maybe there's something smart. Maybe we can throw a bone to the guys that sell dating courses, or here's how to be a viral, like, macho influencer courses. I don't know. Maybe there's some level of intelligence and business acumen in that. Okay. So that's what I'm trying to offer these dudes, is like, maybe there's a little bit of something to what my friend was saying about how intelligent people can see the angles and they can play that four-dimensional chess. But the more that I talked to my friend, the more I was like, I don't think that's actually accurate. You might have to have a certain level of intelligence, but I think what's actually true is that the more you cultivate specifically emotional intelligence, the more you prioritize emotional intelligence, the more overall intelligence you possess, and definitely the more emotional intelligence you possess and prioritize, the more empathy and compassion you invest in, the harder it is to be a bad person. Like, it like, her hypothesis was, the smarter you are, the harder it is to be good. And I'm like, I actually think that the smarter you get, the harder it is to be bad, because you can see all of those angles and all of those ways that you can manipulate the market and you know, take advantage of gullible consumers and of vulnerable consumers, but you can't bring yourself to do it because you have sufficient emotional intelligence that won't allow you to. You are not able to deceive yourself into thinking that what you're doing is somehow okay. You are not able to poison the well of your own brain and say, no, it's actually okay. Like, here's what the Bernie Madoffs do and the Donald Trumps do. The reason why Bernie Madoff was able to do what he did, the reason why he was able to stomach it and live with himself, the reason why he's still able to live with himself, Bernie Madoff has said this in interviews from prison. He said that, like, at the end of the day, everyone that I scammed was more or less doing the same stuff. Like, all of the people that invested money with me were also getting their money in, like, unethical ways. That's just how money is done. That's just how that stuff is done. So I was just, like, scamming ultra-wealthy, unethical people anyway. And that, like, there's a great book called Commander and Cheat that's all about this guy, the guy who wrote it. My StreamYard stream just ended on YouTube. Oh, no. Well, that might be, you know, I think that's it for the YouTube stream. That's it. But we'll be over here on TikTok unless, oh my God, what happened? This sucks. I was right in the groove, dude. I was grooving with it. Well, okay. All right. They're kicking me off of StreamYard. I guess that's it for my YouTube stream, but we're still going to have the audio version on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, whatever. I'll adjust the video description on YouTube to let people know that the stream got interrupted, but whatever. Anyway, this guy played golf with Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is a notorious cheater at golf, because of course he is. And kind of what this guy learned about Donald Trump's character through playing golf with him is that the reason why Donald Trump cheats as much as he does, not just at golf, but at everything, is because he's convinced himself that that's just how the game is played. And that's just like what everyone's actually doing. So this guy tells this anecdote about playing with Donald Trump, and they're in this tournament, and Trump told him at the beginning of the tournament, hey, just so you know, we're going to cheat, but don't worry about it. So is everyone else. Like, that's just what these guys do in this tournament. Everyone cheats. And the guy was like, I don't think that's true. I don't think everyone else is cheating. But the way that Donald Trump justifies the way that he lives his life to himself in his brain that is lacking sufficient emotional intelligence, is he tells himself, this is just what everyone's doing. Everyone's cheating. Bernie Madoff tells himself that. This is just how the game is played. I got caught. I got busted breaking the rules, but like everybody's breaking the rules. And there might be something to that for sure at the levels of wealth that Donald Trump and Bernie Madoff operate at. There's definitely a lot of unethical behavior in the circles that millionaires and billionaires run in, obviously. But like this modality of shutting off your emotional intelligence, shutting off your instinct toward higher ethics and a higher morality so that you can make more money, valuing winning and money over truth and honesty and sincerity, I find very fascinating. I find this very fascinating, this kind of correlation between intelligence and success and money. And like, I think we have this tendency in our society to automatically assume that anyone who's been able to obtain a certain amount of success, a certain amount of money, must have done that because they possess a certain amount of intelligence. And it's like, yeah, to a certain degree. But I really think that there's this whole other level where if you really want to value honesty, sincerity, truth, and really be an ethical person and a person who tries to operate in the world in a way that is genuinely moral, it will actually be harder for you to find monetary success. It will actually be harder for it'll be significantly harder for you to do bad things and to act in bad faith, to do things that you know are untrue, to say things that you know are untrue, and to promote ideas that you know are untrue and harmful. It will become harder for you to do that. I want to talk a little bit about Keith Raniere. This is a good example. Keith Raniere. Keith Raniere is the cult leader who is now serving a life sentence in prison, who started the cult Nexium. If you haven't watched, you know, like the Vow on HBO, it's a great documentary about Nexium. Really crazy, weird sex cult that this dude started. The whole mythos of Keith Raniere, as it was sold to his cult followers, is that Keith Raniere was maybe the smartest man on the planet at that time, maybe one of the smartest people to ever live. It was that hyperbolic. It was that big. That's how they sold the myth of Keith Raniere to Nexium followers, is like anytime there was a new person, the way that they would set up Keith as the leader of this thing is they'd tell people like, so you're going to meet Keith now, and he's one of the smartest people alive, maybe the smartest person alive. There was this whole myth about like Keith having an IQ that was recorded as like the highest IQ of any human ever. So the whole legend of Keith was that he was just so smart, that this guy's brain just operated at a higher frequency, that he just knew more than other people. So the question here in our little story about Keith is, is Keith Raniere actually that smart? And the short answer is fucking no, not at all. In fact, like to any person who's like not initiated in the cult, who just sort of like watches videos of Keith Raniere on YouTube, he's like not very smart at all. He's like not like, he's not even like, it's not even like kind of impressive, the things that he says. It's like, this guy's like, he's like spouting out like, you know, first year psychology bullshit. Like, it's not very impressive stuff at all. Keith would sort of do these parlor tricks. Like, he would tell people that he was a self-taught musician and he would play Moonlight Sonata. It's funny, in some of the documentaries about Nexium, there are like several different clips of Keith like busting out this party trick of how he can play Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven and how he taught himself to play it. And people would be like, wow, Keith is so smart. And I'm like, hey, I'm not calling myself a genius. I'm definitely not doing that. But I taught myself how to play the piano when I was like 12 or 13 years old. I don't think that that's actually that rare of a thing for people to do. And one of the songs that I taught myself how to play when I was 12 or 13 is Moonlight Sonata. Like, it's a beautiful piece of music. It's a beautiful piece, but it's not like the most, it's not like Rachmaninoff. Like, it's not like Keith was like teaching himself some piece of, it's not like Bach. It's like a pretty basic thing to learn how to play on the piano. And like, I'm not taking anything away from the piece, and I'm not taking anything away from like, yeah, I'm so cool, I taught myself how to play songs on the piano when I was a kid. But like, I'm also not out here selling myself as one of the smartest people alive because I taught myself how to play Moonlight Sonata when I was 12 or 13. Keith Raniere was doing that well into his 40s. He was pulling out this like high school part, like literally it's what a high school kid would do. It's what I did when I was a teenager, is I would be at a party and I'd be like, and you guys know the song Boston? Well, check this out. Like, oh, what's that? Does anyone know the song Clocks by Coldplay? Oh, yeah, I taught myself how to play it. Like, that's what a 15-year-old kid does to impress people at a party. And that's what Keith Raniere was doing to impress people in his cult when he was, like, in his 40s. He's insane. But, like, yeah, the myth of Keith Raniere was that he was the smartest man alive. And I want to talk about, like, the ways that these people might manage to convince themselves of their own mythos. You know, just the same way that Donald Trump and Bernie Madoff convinced themselves that there's nothing really wrong with what they're doing because they're just playing the game the way that the game is meant to be played. I also think that there's a little bit of, like, convincing yourself to drink your own Kool-Aid. So Keith Raniere, the way that he got the money to sort of start the idea for Nexium is he made a fortune in multi-level marketing, which, like, of fucking course he did. So multi-level marketing is just sort of like a notorious way for people who are okay with being scammers and schemers and shysters to like make their money. That's how Keith Raniere made his fortune, is through a multi-level marketing scheme. Nothing too original in that, nothing too genius or brilliant in that, but he made a lot of money. And most likely what I think, my armchair assessment of what was going on psychologically with Keith Raniere, is he basically thought, I must be a pretty fucking smart guy because I saw this opportunity to like do this thing, this multi-level marketing thing, and other people were doing it too, but like I made way more money than the other people doing it. So like, not only am I better at multi-level marketing than the other people who are trying to do it, but like I must be smarter than them. I must be more intelligent. Like, I'm seeing angles to this that everyone else isn't seeing. And so he starts buying into his own mythos. He starts buying into his own legend. The same way that there's sort of this feedback loop with people like Andrew Tate and Martin Shkreli and Sam Bankman-Fried, where it's like, even though I started this out as like a person who's running a scheme, the fact that I'm successful at it, and the fact, like Andrew Tate, the fact that like millions of men are coming to me for advice and telling me that I'm helping them, must mean that there's something to what I'm doing here. It started off as a scam, as just a way to just scheme people out of their money. But like, now that we're here and we got all these people listening and everyone's confirming that like what I'm doing is working for them, I must be pretty fucking smart actually. So there's sort of this feedback loop going on in their head that's insulating them and protecting them from reality and from the reality of how unethical and how immoral their actions are. And then they start surrounding themselves and insulating themselves with followers and with people who work for them who are willing to propagate the myth and keep the mythos going. If you're Keith Raniere, you go as far as to like live on a compound with only people who follow you and who acknowledge that you are one of the smartest people alive, if not the smartest person alive, and you just keep that myth going to the point where Keith Raniere started calling himself Vanguard. Called himself Vanguard and had other people call him Vanguard, and he would have a week-long celebration of his birthday every year called V-Week. I'm not lying to you. This is real. If this is the first time you're hearing this, Keith Raniere would have a week-long birthday celebration every year called V-Week, which stands for Vanguard Week, where everyone in the cult would celebrate Keith for an entire week, and everyone would genuinely, like, talk about it as, like, V-Week is my favorite week. Like, no one in the cult cared about their own birthday anymore. They just cared about V-Week and the birthday of Vanguard, because everyone wanted to aspire to the greatness of Vanguard. But, like, here's the thing. Being people who were not taken in by this scam, being people, the people listening to the sound of my voice right now, the people who are live on TikTok right now, being the actual smarts here, who are just sort of looking at all of this from an objective vantage point, an emotionally removed vantage point, we can kind of see that it's like, there's nothing that original about what Keith did. There's nothing particularly brilliant about what he did. And the reason why we don't do that is because we wouldn't be able to live with ourselves if we did that. It's like landlords, man. Like, landlords are out here being like, I'm just playing 4D, 5D chess, dude. Like, don't you get it? If you take seed money given to you by your wealthy parents and you invest that in property and then you crank up the rent on your renters every 6 months and just keep charging them exorbitant rent amounts, you can get rich. Like, why don't people do this? And it's like, because we have a working conscience. It's not because we're stupid. It's either A, because we don't have a wealthy family to give us the seed money to buy all of that investment property, or B, even if we do, we're like not willing to sell our soul for that money. We have, our value system is honesty, fairness, sincerity, you know, truth. We value that more than we value making a quick buck. And this is where I go back to, like, there's a certain level of emotional intelligence that people like this are cutting themselves off from consciously. And I really do think that on some level it's conscious. I'm sure that a lot of it is unconscious because they don't actually want to look at it. But I know on some level, it is something that they are aware of, that they are consciously aware of, that they are actively, purposefully, intentionally doing to themselves, that they are intentionally cutting themselves off from whatever level of emotional intelligence would be required for them to not be so manipulative, not be so abusive, not be so unethical. And the reason why they're doing it is because it's paying. It's working. It fucking works to strangle your emotional intelligence in that way, to cut yourself off from that part of your brain. And the reason why I say that I think I know that people are doing this consciously, there's so much evidence out there of people doing this consciously. There's this video that Blair White made. Blair White is, if you don't know her work, she is a conservative content creator and she's a trans woman. She's a Candace Owens. She's a Christian Walker, if you will. She's a Dave Rubin-esque character. One of those people that, like, should know better and shouldn't be doing what she's doing, but she's doing it anyway. Blair White made this video in, like, 2018 that I can't believe wasn't a bigger deal than it is, than it was, and it didn't make a bigger splash than it did, and it still is, like, something that people don't really talk about very often. Blair White made this video where she announced to her audience that she was going to get out of political content, that she was going to stop making political content. Spoiler alert, spoiler warning, I will let you know right now, Blair White did not stop making political content. She is still making political content and still advocating for conservative beliefs. But the reasons back in this, like, 2018 YouTube video, the reasons that she cited for getting out of the political content grift and game is that she couldn't keep lying to herself, and that she was aware that it was just that. That it was a lie, that it was a con, that it was a grift. She talked about meeting all of these people who are in the same content grift that she's in. All of these conservative content creators, Steve Crowder, Ben Shapiro, Dave Rubin, Matt Walsh. And she talked about how disillusioned she was by realizing that all of them didn't actually believe the things that they were saying online. That, like, in private, behind closed doors, they would all be like, yeah, I think Donald Trump's a fucking idiot. Like, but, like, I gotta say what I gotta say to make money. And that they were doing what they were doing because it was working for them financially. And she just flat out says it. She's just like, yeah, I can't do it anymore. Like, none of us believe what we're saying. We're all just lying for money because it works, because, like, we're popular for lying. And then, like, a week later, she just went right back to the grift, and her audience didn't ever notice or bring it up, and she just continued making money doing what she was doing. And she just doubled down and tripled down and just dug back in and just kept collecting those bags. And she's still collecting those bags. She's still just out there running the conservative content grift and collecting bags. But, like, what Blair White revealed to all of us in that video is something that we all pretty much already knew, which is these people are aware of what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They know that what they're doing is wrong, and they're doing it because it works for them. And quite literally, their livelihood is wrapped up in it. And honestly, like, there is a certain empathetic level and sympathetic level angle that we can take here as the people with the working consciences and the working emotional intelligence. We can take an empathetic and sympathetic level and say, there's not really a whole lot of options for these people at this point. They've sort of really painted themselves into a corner, haven't they? Like, Blair White and Steven Crowder and Ben Shapiro, if they were to switch sides tomorrow and come out and say, I was wrong about all that stuff, I'm so sorry, I would like to be a voice for the left, we would all say, cool, thank you for admitting that you were wrong, now go sit over there, we don't want you here. You can go and sit down and think about what you did and go get a job driving for Uber, I don't really give a shit, but we're not going to give you a platform. We're not going to give you a job. So, like, quite literally, the only way for these people to stay relevant, the only way for them to stay in the, like, getting paid, is to just keep the grift up, to keep the con up. They don't have another option. And when I talk about this, I can already hear people in my comments section saying, yeah, but Austin, aren't you painted into the exact same corner? Aren't you doing the same thing? Aren't you in the same situation where you're so dug in being a voice for the left and advocating for the queer community and advocating against racism and police brutality? Aren't you so dug in on these things that you also have no other option, that you have to keep running your game? I hear the argument. Here's the turn. This is my favorite part. This is my favorite part of the episode. Like, this gives me chills. Like, I get so excited about this. This is the reality. Y'all, if I be for real with me, go with me here. If I switch sides tomorrow, if I come out and I say, you know what, actually, they're grooming kids and they need to knock it off with the kid grooming, and I agree with all of you guys, and I actually, you know what, and I was wrong, and I'm coming out full Trump 2024, dude, I would blow the fuck up in conservative social media. They would boost me to the like, here's the thing, is like, conservative content creation and conservative influencing is severely lacking in genuine charisma, is severely lacking in genuine creativity. I'm good enough at what I do. I'm articulate enough. I'm smart enough and intelligent enough that if I were to go and start playing for the other team, I'd fucking get a show on Fox News. I'd take Greg Gutfeld's job. I would be a late night host on Fox News making millions of dollars. Like, it would do wonders for my career financially. I mean, you all would hate me. all of the people that all the audience that I've cultivated here would be super disappointed and bummed out, but I would skyrocket up. And so you might look at that and say, like, okay, well, isn't that evidence that the right is more forgiving than the left? The left would be very cruel to a Ben Shapiro if he were to switch sides, or to a Steve Crowder if he were to switch sides, or to a Blair White if she were to switch sides, but the right would accept an Austin Archer if he were to switch sides. Doesn't that mean that the right, it's like, no. This is fundamentally about our difference of values. This is fundamentally about the fact that the left values honesty and truth and sincerity more than anything else. That's what we value, is telling the truth, being honest, and being accountable. So if Blair White or fucking Matt Walsh or Dave Rubin or, I mean, Christian Walker's been doing this. Christian Walker's been trying to walk it back and come back to our team, being like, sorry, guys, sorry I made all of those really homophobic posts. Can I be on your team again? Christian Walker's trying to do that. Fucking what's-her-name Kelly Cadigan is trying to do that, being like, the right's pretty mean to me and pretty transphobic. And it's like, yeah, Kelly, we know. And she's like, can I come over here again? And we're like, no, but you can shut up and stop being an influencer. And the reason why we do that is because it's like, hey, Kelly, Christian, you've broken our trust. You don't have the trust of this audience, and I don't know if you can ever regain the trust of this audience because you've spent so much of your time in the limelight being insincere and lying and spreading harmful misinformation. So even if you're ready to be accountable for the lies that you've spread and for the misinformation that you spread, we're not going to platform you. We might look at you and go, thank you for saying that. Thank you for acknowledging that you lied. But like, you're going to have to be accountable for those lies. And we're not just going to usher you to the front of the line and give you a platform and say, now be on our team and have a big audience for our team. No, we've got that well covered. We have a lot of people already covering that much better who like didn't spend years and years spreading misinformation that was really, really harmful to marginalized, vulnerable communities. So like, we got it covered. But the reason why the right would put me to the front of the line if I switch teams tomorrow is because they don't give a shit about truth. They don't give a shit about honesty. They don't give a shit about integrity. What they value is winning, baby. They want to win. They want to dunk on the left. They want to dunk on left. They would love nothing more than to say, look at this. We got your little soy boy. We got your little mustache soy boy, Austin Archer. He's on our team now. We win. We win. They don't care that like that they probably know that I'm just lying to get money. They're all lying to get money too. They'll happily give me money. They'll happily like usher me to the front of the line because what's most important is we win. So what's most important about having Christian Walker on our team, having Candace Owens on our team, having Blair White on our team is, oh, you're going to call me transphobic now? Well, look, I got Blair White right here. What do you got to say about that? And it's like, okay, cool. You have one trans person. We have the overwhelming majority of trans people and queer people on our side. Like, you're not winning there, but like, that's what it is for them. It's winning. It's points scored in the culture war. And that's all that matters. They don't really actually care if Blair White is genuinely on their team or not. They don't care if Blair White means the things that she says. They care about winning. That's all that matters. And so that's just, I mean, it's a fundamental difference in values. I got one anecdote that I'm going to share that really illustrates this. And then I'm going to go into the comments because I think I've made my point. But I recently made this video responding to this conservative influencer named Blake. It's a woman named Blake. She's got a pretty big platform on Instagram, 150,000 followers, which on Instagram is nothing to sneeze at. And she's, you know, the, you know, stereotypical hallmark of a conservative Christian woman. She's white, blonde, the whole nine yards. And she made this video where she said, but more or less, that she has no idea why it is that people on the left are so frustrated with conservative beliefs. Like, she just, she's completely, she can't believe it, in the video. She's like, I don't know. Why do you all hate me so much? She says in the video. What is it about my beliefs that bother you so much? What is it about my beliefs that trigger you so much? And she's presenting this as though she genuinely does not know, as though no one has ever been able to adequately explain it to her. And right off the bat, like, I'm not sold. I didn't make my response. I did. So I made this long response video to her where I answer all of her questions in her video. But I didn't make the video because I was trying to like convince Blair or Blake to see things my way, or like hopefully she would watch it and realize the error of her ways. I'm not like, this person is not acting in good faith. I know that right off the bat. I don't believe her premise of her video. I do not believe that a conservative content creator with a platform of 150,000 followers has never had anyone adequately explain to her what it is about her beliefs that they find so detestable. I just don't buy that. I just don't buy that, like, no one's ever been able to explain to her, like, why certain beliefs that she holds are racist and why that's bad, or why certain beliefs that she holds are misogynistic and why that's bad, or, you know, the list goes on and on. I don't buy it. And then the way that she presents her video really confirms my suspicion of her sincerity. She frames all of these different beliefs that she's like, is it because I believe that babies deserve to get born? Is that what it is? That I have this very reasonable belief that babies deserve to get born? Is it that I believe that people should have the right to not participate in a science experiment like getting a vaccine? Is that really the terrible belief? So, like, it's really giving, you know, the popular girl at school that everyone hates going, like, why does everyone hate me? Is it because I'm really pretty? Is that what it is? Is it because my dad's richer than all of your dads? Is that why you're mad at me? And we're all like, hey, no, it's because you hit the foreign exchange student with your pink Jeep Wrangler and then you made her pay for the scratch in your car. Like, are you kidding? Like, no, Blake, that's not why. Like, it's not a good faith video. It's not sincere. And also it's like, she's framing those things like, is it because I want babies to be alive? As though the position of the left is like, we don't want babies to be alive. She's not framing the conversation in an intellectually honest way. She has a big enough platform to know that she's doing that. She's baiting, as someone just said in the comments on TikTok, 100%. She wants me to make the video that I made responding to her. She wants my followers to show up and engage with her video and comment on her video. She's outrage farming. She's trying to get that response. She's not actually asking the question sincerely. She's not saying, please, genuinely, could anyone explain this to me? She's hoping to make people like me upset. She's hoping to make my audience upset and to boost her own platform off of that rage. Again, a person who's like prioritizing winning and money and bags over any kind of sincerity, over any kind of intellectual honesty. Her priority is just winning the game, is just getting more clicks. More clicks equals more money for Blake, period. But here's why I'm telling this anecdote. Because Blake messaged me. She DM'd me on Instagram. And I was really surprised by the content of the DM that she sent me. She was very contrite sounding and very like sincere and kind even. She reached out and she was like, hey Austin, I just saw your video and I just wanted to say like, thank you so much for taking the time to make such a thorough response to my video. And she was like, I actually have scrolled through some of your content. And I got to tell you, like, I'm genuinely impressed with what you do. I think you're really good at what you do. I think that you're very articulate and very well spoken. And I think you do a good job of communicating your message. And I get why your audience likes you. Like, honestly, I think I might be a fan, but we are pretty ideologically different from each other. Like, we disagree a lot. And that was, she kind of just left it at that. And she was like, but good luck to you out there. Like, thanks for the video. And I was like, I was not expecting that response. And so I responded to her and I said, "Hey, Blake, this is a very disarming and honestly endearing message. Like, I gotta be honest with you, I was not expecting this from you. And like, I didn't make that video thinking that I was gonna get through to you. I didn't make that video thinking that I was gonna change your mind. I don't think I changed your mind still, but like, I'm impressed with this response." And then I said this thing to her. I just sort of added this in there. I was like, "I will say, because I don't wanna fully let you off the hook," I was like, "I think that the reason you're responding this way and the reason that you're having the response to my content that you're having is because I think on some level you understand my message and you understand what I'm saying in my videos." I'm like, I said, "I think you heard me in my response video to you, and I think you understood me. I think it made sense to you. And I think that you know that you don't actually have any good responses to anything that I said in my video. You're not capable of making a good response video where you tell me why all of my arguments are wrong. And I think you know that." And I was like, "And I'm not saying this to be rude, but I think that like you're aware of that." And I said, "I don't expect you to publicly acknowledge this to your audience, but I want to just say between you and me here in the messages that I think it's kind of cool that you get that and that you and I know that you get that." And I was like, "And I said in the message, I was like, I fully expect you to continue doing what you do and to continue making conservative content. Your public facing persona and career depends on you doing that." And again, I mentioned this earlier, like, I get that. This is her job now. This is what she does. And if she were to switch ideological teams, she'd be out of the job. We would not have her. We would not platform her. So like, she's going to continue doing what she's doing, and I understand that, but I was like, I think it's kind of cool that between you and me, we can have this little moment where we acknowledge that, like, you heard me, and you understood me, and you know that what I said is more or less correct. Then that's the nice story. But then Blake did this really interesting thing that is, this is the reason why I'm telling this story. Because then she said she didn't disagree with my message. She wasn't like, "No, that's not true." She just wrote back, "Yeah, now if we could just get the people in your audience to stop being so awful to me in my comments." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Okay, so now here's where we're going." Is now what Blake's brain is doing is feverishly looking for something that can get her off the hook. Her conscience has entered the game. Watching my video and having this little cordial exchange with me, her emotional intelligence, her better angels, her conscience has entered the chat. And it is saying, "Blake, shit, dude, we gotta get out, man. We gotta make a video and tell everybody that like we were wrong and we gotta stop what we're doing." But Blake knows she can't do that because she's got a good thing going here with this conservative audience and with this conservative content grift. So she's got to find a way to shut that conscience up. She's got to find a way to close off that emotional intelligence valve. And so what she's going to latch onto is, "Well, you people from your audience have been really mean to me. And so you're not all that perfect either, Austin, because people in your audience have been mean to me." And so I was like, "Okay, so here's where we're going." So I responded and I sent a bunch of voice messages to Blake because there was too much for me to try to write out. And I went, and I was very calm. I just said, "Hey, Blake, while I've got you here, let's be really clear here and let's be honest. Just between the two of us, you are under no obligation to admit this to anyone, not even me, but like what's happening here is not you, Blake, were minding your own business, going about your life, and then some mean internet leftist guy with a mustache sent a mob of trolls to your page to be mean to you and bully you. That's not at all what's happening. You made a very inflammatory video, a very provocative, inflammatory video, where in that video, you insinuated that people on the left are pro-child sex trafficking, that people on the left are pro sexualizing minors and grooming minors. You insinuated that that we're pro, like, killing babies. You insinuated all of these terrible things. And the conclusion of your video is that we do these things because we're fulfilling prophecy, because we are the bad guys from the Bible, that your holy book said that we would do these things, and it said that we would hate you while doing these things. So you say all these, like, really inflammatory, really provocative things. And you even ask in the video for someone to explain to you what's so wrong about believing that, with what's so wrong with saying all of that stuff. So here I come making a video responding to your request for feedback. And here comes my audience responding to your inflammatory request for feedback. And now you're taking a victim posture and saying, oh my, why are you being so mean to me? So I say all of this to her. She responds, I don't want a moral lecture from you. Bye-bye. And blocks me. And that's the end of the chat. So what started off as a potentially nice little moment ended with Blake doing what she needed to do. Doing what she needed to do to stay where she is. Blake's livelihood right now and her sense of self, her existential safety, depends on her not having an awakening, not having a moment where she realizes, fuck, I'm beat. I don't have a good response to anything this guy said. So what she needs to do is craft a disingenuous narrative where all these mean leftists were just rude to her in her comments for no reason, even though it's such an obvious case of cause and effect that, like, she went on the internet and picked a fight and said, come at me, bring it. And then when people brought it, she wasn't ready to handle them bringing it. That's all that happened. But Blake needs it to, she needs it to be that I'm the bad guy and that what I did was not okay and that what my audience is doing is not okay and that we're unfairly treating her. She needs it to be that so that she can stay where she is. She needs to be less intelligent. She needs to be less intelligent to continue being a bad person. Dude, I'm fucking good at this, man. I'm getting so goddamn good at this. That's why I would fucking crush if I switch sides. I'm so much better at this shit than any of them are. God damn it, I'm good at this shit. Isn't that nice? How well I just brought all of that home? This all started with my friend saying, man, I think that the smarter you are, the harder it is to be a good person. Your boy Austin is here saying, no, actually, the smarter you are, the harder it is to be bad. And I think I just slam dunked it. I think I just slamity slam dunked it. I think I just, boom, dunked it. Like, I'm so fucking good at this shit. Dude, the smarter you are, the harder it is to be a bad person. I could be making so much more money. I could have such a bigger platform if I were to switch sides and be on the right. And I have to choose to have a smaller platform and make less money because I have to choose to value honesty and emotional intelligence and intellectual truth. Boom, dude. Boom. Whew. Let's go to TikTok. Amy Withap on TikTok says, stupid people are more capable of cruelty. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, I don't even want to say that, like, again, it's like, I don't even want to be so reductive as to say that, like, they're all just stupid because, like, there is a certain level of intelligence that's required. Like, and I talked about that earlier. I talked about how, like, you do need to be sort of, like, kind of smart to hatch some of these schemes. Some of these people aren't very smart. I don't think Andrew Tate is smart, and I don't think that, like, Keith Raniere is actually smart at all. I think Keith Raniere, like, is just insanely lucky and, like, loaded with just the most audacity. But I think that some of these people are like reasonably smart. Here's a good example of like a smart person who is doing everything she can to close herself off from her full intelligence. J.K. Rowling. J.K. Rowling is smart enough to not be doing what she's doing. She's smart enough and has spent her life cultivating enough compassion and emotional intelligence to know better. But right now, I think Joe Rowling on some level knows that if she were to take accountability for what she's doing and be honest about what she's doing, it would be the end of her career. We would all go, thank you very much. Now go sit over there and count your money and think about what you're doing. And she'd be fine. She'd be fine. But what's keeping Joe Rowling relevant right now, what's keeping her alive in the social conscience in our minds is her digging her heels in and doubling down, even though she knows better. So I don't want to be so reductive to just say, Andy 55 Frosted Flake says, what did she do? I forgot. I have a whole episode about Joe Rowling too. It's called, that episode is called, I think it's called like why people are bigots or something like that. It's something about like what makes a person a bigot or like why do people do bigoted things. But Joe Rowling is just a massive transphobe. She's like really, really hardcore red-pilled on transphobia. She's like really, really, really dug in on being transphobic online. And she's had, it's been going on for years. It's been like years of this and people have been telling her for years why what she's doing is harmful and wrong and why she needs to stop. And she's doing this thing where she's kind of doing what Blake did. She's disingenuously framing the arguments of the people who are telling her why she's wrong so that she can stay where she is. She's making herself less intelligent and less honest so that she can stay dug in. Like Joe, there's this whole podcast called The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling, where she gets interviewed throughout this whole podcast and explains her position. And several times in that podcast, she's like, I'm fully aware of the arguments of the people who are mad at me, and I just find flaws with them. And then every time she states the arguments of the people that are mad at her, she completely strawmans their arguments. Like, she just completely inaccurately states the argument, and it's like, no, Joe, that's not the argument, and you definitely know that. Like, you, at this point, you definitely have heard the accurate version of the argument, and so you know that you're lying there. But she's doing that. Joe Rowling is doing that as a form of self-preservation. It's what she has to do to stay relevant. If she comes out and says, I'm really sorry, I was a huge transphobe for the last 5 years, I was wrong, we will go, thank you for saying that, now go sit down, we're done with you. And she'll be done, and she'll be out. And in order to stay relevant, she has to dig in and pretend that she doesn't, let's see. Bleeding Heart Liberal of Alberta says, Austin, what's the deal with psychology saying that a strong sense of fairness is pathological? Geez, I don't know anything about that. I wouldn't argue with it. Like, I got my fair share of pathologies and problems. I have a big problem with like fairness. I have a whole episode on this podcast about rules and about like my problem with rules is like they need to be fair and they need to make sense to me. I have panic disorder and depression. Like, I got all kinds of like issues that I am working on in therapy and in AA and stuff like that. So like, I don't know. Yeah, like, maybe it is a hindrance. Maybe my obsession with fairness and with truth and with honesty and with sincerity is something that's holding me back from being a multimillionaire who owns yachts and goes to really cool parties with other rich people and flies on private jets. I don't know. And like, maybe at the end of the day, if there's no God and there's no like moral code to the universe, all of our, you know, feeble attempts to like be ethical and be fair and be nice people really don't amount to anything. And maybe we should all just be out there playing golf like Donald Trump plays golf and just like cheating and just like trying to win the game. Maybe the actual value we all should have is just the value of winning, plain and simple. Maybe we should value win. I'm not going to do it anytime soon, but like, that's an interesting thought. It's an interesting thought that like, if the universe has no objective morality, if it has no objective moral code, maybe the only thing there is to do is to try to win. And maybe that's all Bernie Madoff was doing. I don't know. But like, as it sits, I am pretty fixated on fairness and kindness and honesty, intellectual honesty, especially when engaging with sociopolitical and socioeconomic issues. I really want to engage with people who are capable of having the conversation in an intellectually honest way. And that seems to be a characteristic that is severely lacking on the right. Vic Stick says, you should do a podcast one day. That's a really good idea. I'd be really good at it. Somebody just said Roman Roy post self-development. Dude, that is interesting. If you've watched that show, I'm not going to spoil anything, but Roman Roy, it's like, you know, like Roman Roy's value and the value of all of the Roy children and the value that they were taught by their father is just winning. Just winning. Plain and simple. By any means necessary. Those kids love each other. They do. They have genuine love for each other and they love their dad. And that's in there and it's in the mix. But what they value more than their love for each other is winning. So that's why they keep stabbing each other in the back and like cheat and like going around each other, you know. But like once the game is over and once the game is not there to be won anymore, all three of them, their entire sense of self collapses. There's nothing left for them to do. And Roman Roy, I love the arc of him in the last season because he's really starting to see that like he's not gonna win, like that he's most likely not gonna win the game. And he just starts to crumble. And it's like the biggest character shift for any of them. Like you never really see behind the veneer of Roman until the fourth season. And then you get to like see like, oh, the person that's under there, the scared little boy that just like loves his dad and just wanted his dad to love him back. Like that scared little boy has no idea what to do with his life now. Now that like the game's not there to be, you know, competed in or won. It's great writing. Great writing. Eugene S. Gluck says, the universe maybe don't have an objective moral code, but humans do have evolutional stuff. Okay, yeah, this is an interesting point. Yeah, that like there might not be, and I agree, that there might not be an objective moral code to the universe. I actually personally believe that there isn't. I don't believe that the universe has like a desire for some kind of moral behavior from us. I don't think that the universe works that way, and I don't think that like God as a concept works that way. I think that that would be very strange if the universe had like a set of hyper-specific rules that it needed us to follow. But I do believe that there are evolutionary like mandates toward certain moral behavior and certain ethical behavior. I think that like antisocial behavior is categorized as antisocial behavior for a reason, because it's just behavior that's not good for the species. So a great example of this is like what happened during COVID. And I talked about this in my response video to Blake, because one of her points was like, are you guys mad at me because I think that people should have had the right to not participate in a science experiment? And it's like, no. People on the left were always okay with you opting out of getting vaccinated. You always had the right to opt out of that. We wanted you to voluntarily opt into doing it because it would serve the greater good, because that's what was best for the species. So this is a really, really great example of like our differing values from the left and the right. The left had no interest in making COVID political. In fact, the left, in general, most of the people I know on the left don't have an interest in making most of the things that we care about political. They're only political because of our political opponents, because there exists political opposition to it. But like, boy, like a global pandemic affecting every country and every person on Earth really should not have been something that there were like sides on. But because the right values winning and values just like being opposed to the left, they couldn't go along with not just vaccines, but social distancing, mask wearing, like you name it. They couldn't do any of it because if they did it, it would have meant that they were teaming up with their ideological rivals. And they don't believe in solidarity. They don't believe in teaming up. They don't believe in doing what's evolutionarily mandated as best for the species. They believe in winning. So if our team is doing this thing, if our team is wearing masks and social distancing and getting vaccinated, their team has to be not doing that. And they have to find some kind of justification as to why they're not. And that's why their arguments so often are like so bad. That's why their arguments are like so paper thin and so easy to debunk, because like it's not really about how solid their argument is. That doesn't really matter. That comes second to what the priority is, which is the priority is just winning. Just beating them, beating the other team. And so whatever I gotta say, whatever I gotta tell myself, whatever I gotta tell my audience to beat them, I'll do. This is a great comment from April on TikTok, who says they'll, and puts in asterisk, she says they'll win us all to death. And like, it's true. They are trying to win us all to death. Like on climate change, they're trying to win us all to death. On police brutality, they're trying to win us all to death. On gender ideology, they're trying to win all gender nonconforming, non-heteronormative people to death. So I do think that like, yeah, there's something evolutionary in humanity that's like, the reason why I shouldn't engage in antisocial behavior is because it's better for the species and it's better for the survival of the species, and the survival of the species is good for my survival. So anthropologically, like we are, some of us are hardwired to like want to stay alive and want to keep the species alive and want to keep the species operating in a healthy way with the surrounding ecosystem that the species exists in. And that's, I mean, God, we're really into some deep, cool shit here, because that's something that's going on with, you know, conservatives like to say that wokeism is a mind virus. And I really think that like every time conservatives make an accusation, it's a confession, because conservatism really is the mind virus. Like it is genuinely an ideology that is ripping people away from evolutionary mandates that are baked into them, survival mechanisms that are baked into them. And religion's also really good at like helping out with that. Like religion's really good at helping people like go against their best interests and go against their best survival instincts and stuff like that. But yeah, they're like more concerned with winning than surviving, more concerned with, you know, winning than anything. I Am Groot says, the ones owning them are the ones who are vaccinated while telling them not to be. Yeah, this goes back to the beginning of the episode. I'm trying not to say the other word because I'm live on TikTok right now. And TikTok tends to suppress my live streams when I say things like that. But at the beginning of the episode, like talking about Blair White and how Blair White made that YouTube video about how she's a grifter and all these other people are grifters too. And like everybody that was telling these people don't get vaccinated to own the libs was vaccinated. Like Blair White got vaccinated. Steve Crowder got vaccinated. Ben Shapiro got vaccinated. Tucker Carlson got vaccinated. Lauren Boebert got vaccinated. Marjorie Taylor Greene got vaccinated. Like they're all vaccinated. Like it was Trump's administration that made the vaccine, you know, of course they were all vaccinated, but they told these people not to get vaccinated because that's just the playbook. Is just like we say whatever we need to say to stay relevant, to keep making money, to keep making bags. Monty says, some of my family said don't get vaxxed because it would make me an atheist. That's awesome. Can you imagine something that has the power to do that? That makes me think of, and I wanted to talk about this on the episode, so I'm glad you wrote this comment, because that makes me think of this whole thing with like the Sound of Freedom movie that's out right now, that Jim Caviezel movie. Because believing that like a vaccine has the ability to make someone an atheist. Jim Caviezel and Tim Ballard. So Jim Caviezel is in this really shitty conservative propaganda film called Sound of Freedom that's out right now. And Jim Caviezel, if you've been wondering like, oh yeah, Jim Caviezel, why doesn't he have a career in Hollywood anymore? What happened to Jim Caviezel? Wonder no further. It's because Jim Caviezel lost his mind and became a QAnon nut. And that's why Jim Caviezel doesn't have a career in Hollywood anymore and can only be in like bad conservative propaganda movies. But yeah, like Jim Caviezel is like a full-blown QAnon insane person. Jim Caviezel believes that QAnon and the deep state is creating some kind of drug that they make from the blood of children that can map his DNA and his DNA alone and can like be airborne and go into his bloodstream and stop his heart. So Jim Caviezel could be on a plane with a bunch of people and this chemical that the deep state is making out of the blood of sacrificed children can go into Jim Caviezel and stop his heart in particular. And like, it can target Jim Caviezel. So Jim Caviezel's insane. He's lost his mind. And that's why he's in The Sound of Freedom. But the man he's playing, Tim Ballard, I'm so glad that you brought this up. Tim Ballard is another great example of a right-wing grifter. So Tim Ballard is a real-life person. He's a Mormon guy. Shout out Mormons. I'm a Mormon from back in the day. And Tim Ballard is a real-life guy who has, in his life, actually done a lot of boots-on-the-ground work in rescuing children from child sex trafficking rings. Cool. Thanks, Tim Ballard, for that and nothing else. That's real. And, like, this is the funny thing about, like, this conservative talking point of, like, well, we're against child sex trafficking. It's like, yeah, so are we. So is everyone. You fucking weirdos. Like, of course we are. It's the insinuation that they're fighting against the Hollywood elite, the woke power structure. And that's what Tim Ballard has been propagating in all of the press for Sound of Freedom. He keeps talking about how like the biggest thing fueling child sex trafficking right now is the woke agenda, is the liberal woke agenda, the Hollywood elites, the deep state. So Tim Ballard is a person who should ostensibly know what is actually going on with child sex trafficking in the world. Tim Ballard has been boots on the ground doing this work in real life. So Tim Ballard actually knows who's doing child sex trafficking, what it really looks like, what it actually is, and like where it's happening. He actually has firsthand experience knowing that. Tim Ballard has never rescued a bunch of kids from the basement of some Hollywood producer's mansion. That's never happened. Tim Ballard's never like been to a private island that George Soros was on with a bunch of his friends and like rescued a bunch of kids and put them into a helicopter and flown away. Like that hasn't happened. Tim Ballard knows that that's not what's going on. But Tim Ballard tells everyone that that's what's going on because that makes Tim Ballard bags of cash. And that's why I say thanks, Tim Ballard, for your work in that and nothing else, because Tim Ballard sucks, just like Jim Caviezel sucks. But Tim Ballard's he has an organization that's like a quote-unquote charity that works in child sex trafficking, and all of the other major well-respected child sex trafficking organizations have disassociated themselves from Tim Ballard's organization because Tim Ballard would not stop spreading misinformation about child sex trafficking, like, which just makes sense. It's like doctors disassociating themselves from doctors who spread COVID misinformation. It's like medical boards stripping the medical license from doctors who spread medical misinformation about COVID. It's like you can't do that. If you're going to be part of our mission to like help kids who are actually in need, you can't be spreading misinformation about what's actually happening. We can't have you doing that. So all of these organizations have distanced themselves from him, separated themselves from him. They have nothing to do with him anymore. And of course, what Tim Ballard is going to tell all of his fans on all of these conservative podcasts that he's going on because he's in this really terrible movie, is that the reason why all of those organizations have separated from him is because he's speaking the truth, because Tim Ballard is telling the truth, and that's why they've all separated from him. That's all. Also, what Jim Caviezel is telling himself about why he doesn't have a career in Hollywood anymore is because Jim Caviezel had the guts to speak out about against what's actually happening in Hollywood, and that's why Jim Caviezel doesn't have a career anymore. And it's like, no, Jim, it's because you, like, a few people worked with you, and they were like, oh, Jim's insane. They were like, let's just like not hire Jim anymore. He, I don't know what happened, but like he went insane. Like, so bye, Jim. Like, good luck being insane. Yeah. So that's another really, really good example of like how people who are in that kind of feedback loop of like convincing themselves to stay in the grift machine don't learn, and how they don't change, because like everything is proof to them of you know, like me and my followers being mean to Blake on Instagram was proof to Blake that she doesn't need to listen to people on the left, that people on the left are just mean. Because like in Blake's mind, what happened in that interaction between us, going, this is going back in the conversation, but in her mind, what happened in that interaction is I made kind of a snarky response video to her video. And she came to me with a really nice message. She was very civil and respectful. And she even complimented me and she was nice. And then I wasn't willing to tell all my followers to leave her alone. So that's proof that she came to me. She did what she needed to do. She was very nice, but me and my followers are mean. So she doesn't need to listen to anything else that I'm saying. And that's essentially what Tim Ballard and Jim Caviezel are doing too, is like, they don't need to listen to any of the actual facts that like scientists and people who know what they're talking about are telling them. They can just use the fact that like Tim Ballard's, you know, organization has been, all these other organizations have disassociated from him, and Jim Caviezel doesn't have a career in mainstream movies anymore. They can just use that as like evidence that they're doing the right thing. And they need to do that so that they can justify continuing to do what they're doing. Somebody said, no surprise, Mel Gibson is on that train. Yeah, for sure. This witch says, when did Jim lose it? I wonder if that is why Taraji left that show. She was, oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, I don't know when Jim lost it, but he's gone. He's, and again, Jim's one of those people that if he ever comes back and says, sorry, my bad, I shouldn't have said that stuff, we'll go, thank you for saying that, Jim. Thank you for taking accountability. Now go sit over there and get a job doing something else. You're not coming back, bud. Because we value accountability and honesty. Let's see. Somebody said, did Ballard have to leave his own former organization? And then somebody else said they made him leave. I think that there's something like that. I can't verify that right now, but I think that there's something like that too, where like, you know, it's so funny because to the right, people on the right are acting like Tim Ballard is just like this, like he's a superhero. Like, this guy's incredible, but it's like, yeah, but like all of the organizations he worked with want nothing to do with him anymore. Yeah, he's got this cool propaganda movie that you're going to see, but all of the organizations he worked with are like, we can't work with you, Tim, if you're going to keep lying about what child sex trafficking is and like what causes it and like what, like Tim, like we'd love to let you keep working for us. Also, Tim, with one of his organizations, one of his charitable organizations, he was paying himself a salary of like $560,000 a year. And that was like before he would, you know, all these other investments that he had. So like Tim Ballard has been making bank off of the right wing grift machine. Of course he has. This witch says, someone said he was behind that Wayfair shit. He was. Tim Ballard, I don't know if he was behind it, but Tim Ballard for a long time was propagating, probably is still propagating the Wayfair conspiracy theory that Wayfair was selling children. You know, they were like selling like an armoire, and they would be like, this armoire is 4'11" and dark brown, and like, and that they, what Wayfair was actually selling was people. It was total bullshit, and Tim Ballard was 100% propagating and spreading that lie. So yeah, Tim Ballard sucks, and that movie Sound of Freedom sucks, and everyone who watched it and liked it sucks. And but like, that's why the conservative grift machine works, is like, this is an important thing to talk about. We talked about like the intelligence level needed to be a schemer like this, to be a grifter like this, to be a Matt Walsh, a Ben Shapiro, a Steve Crowder, a Tim Ballard, a Keith Raniere even. And it's like, sure, there's some level of intelligence needed, but here's the real thing. The reason why it works is because the people that they're selling to, the people that they're selling their grift to, are actually, let's just say it, they're the least intelligent people in the world. They're the least intelligent people in society. So the people who are going and watching Sound of Freedom and being like, they're the people that would create the society from the movie Idiocracy. Like, they're, those are the people. Like, they are the people who are like the ancestors of Dax Shepard's character in the movie Idiocracy. It's those people. Ooh, I love this. I love this. Monty says, admittedly, I used to say both the left and the right were the problem. Archer helped me. Ha ha ha. I hate to admit it. Hey, what's up? Burr, 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 burr. Didn't I just tell y'all that I'm fucking good at this shit? Now, I have said, I've made videos about the fact that like, I'm not out here doing what I do because I'm trying to like win the debate or convince people or get converts. That's not my main objective. My main objective is just to spit facts. My main objective is just to tell the fucking truth. Like, that's like, I'm here to entertain. I'm trying to entertain my audience. I have an audience of about 1.5 million people across different social media platforms. My number one priority is to them. I'm not making my content to just try to convince people to see things my way. I'm making content for the 1.5 million people that like give me their attention and follow me. So I'm trying to offer them some comedic catharsis. I'm trying to give them a version of their values that feels well ordered and well articulated, and all of that stuff. But like, if a byproduct of what I'm doing is that I help people like Monty realize that like both the left and the right aren't just as bad as each other, and that the right is significantly worse than the left, that's cool too. And I think that that always can be and will be a byproduct of like speaking the truth clearly, fluidly, articulately. People always come down on me because they say that like I'm not nice enough and that I could be nicer. And I'm like, I don't need to be nice. I've got the truth on my side. First of all, the right isn't nice. They're not nice with their message. They're not like doing it in this super kind, civil way. And second of all, I think I'm like plenty nice. I think I'm probably even nicer than I need to be. But the biggest thing about my content is like, I'm just trying to tell the truth. I'm just, so like, if I make a mistake, I will correct it. If I say something that's not true, I will go in and try to fix that. I'm just trying to say things that are true in a clear, well-articulated, well-formatted way. And also like, an entertaining way, so that if people like Monty are watching in good faith, so like plenty of centrists, I think, watch my content because they're like, I want to be open-minded to the messaging coming from both sides. I think both sides are equally bad and equally good. I think both sides get some things right and some things wrong. A lot of those people wind up watching content from me as well as content from, you know, Jordan Peterson, whoever. I just want to make sure that while they're watching my content, it's really clear what my argument is and why my argument is that, and that like I'm stating the argument in a very tight way, in a way that feels like it's pretty hard to contend with. And like, I want to make sure that I'm never strawmanning the right, That's a thing I get accused of a lot in my content is people are like, when I do the sketches where I play both characters, people are always like, well, you're straw manning. And I'm like, well, you don't understand what a straw man fallacy is. Cause you think that since I'm playing the conservative character as kind of a dope, that's straw manning. But straw manning is just representing the opposition argument incorrectly, deliberately misrepresenting the opposition argument so that you have an easier time contending with it, which is what conservative content creators do. My goal, I don't have to do that. Like, conservative arguments and positions are so routinely bad and flimsy, I don't have to misrepresent them to make my point. And I really, really try my hardest when I do those sketches, specifically when I play both characters, to make sure that the conservative character's dialogue is like word for word the way that it is phrased to me by conservative people that I encounter out in the wild. So like when I'm doing those videos, I'm like, I want to make sure that I'm like stating this argument as correctly as I possibly can so that like the any centrists watching it can be like, that is what they say. That is actually like what they say. That is the argument. And then I can show you like how obviously and easily debunkable that argument, that bad argument is. And again, I talked about this earlier in the podcast, but I'll restate this. The reason why conservative arguments are so routinely flimsy and bad is because conservatives don't actually really care about coming up with solid arguments to defend their positions. All they care about is like owning and wrecking the libs. So that's why conservatives will straw man. That they, because they don't care about being intellectually honest. So like when Ben Shapiro is wrecking some college student or wrecking, you know, like when libs of TikTok is wrecking some liberal from TikTok, they're almost always misrepresenting whoever it is that they're quote unquote wrecking. And it doesn't, they don't really care that they're misrepresenting that person. The point is winning. The point is for their audience to see them winning. So libs of TikTok will just straight up lie about whoever's video they're posting to Twitter. They'll like take it out of context and straight up lie about what's going on in the video and knowingly lie because telling the truth isn't the point. The point is making liberals and leftists look bad. And so that's what Ben Shapiro does. That's what Matt Walsh does. I don't need to misrepresent their positions. Their positions are just very, very weak. When conservatives say, sorry, facts don't care about your feelings, there's only two genders, it's like, well, what the fuck? You're just right out of the gate wrong. You know, but you can say that to an audience full of people who don't know anything about biology and they'll just be like, yeah, there's only two, right? Like, obviously. And it's like, no, like, I don't do debate content for a reason, because I think that it's a waste of my time and of everyone else's time. Like, people criticize me for this too. When I do the videos of me playing both characters, they're like, oh, so you're just having a shower argument? I'm like, no, I don't want to have the debate with a real person because it would be pointless. I wouldn't convince them of anything. They would probably talk over me and topic dump and do a lot of goalpost shifting. I'm just showing you like a version of the debate where like I get to speak and just showing you like how bad their arguments are. But I am accurately representing their arguments. But like, so that argument, for instance, there are only two genders. Like, it's such a bad argument. And if I could have a debate with a Ben Shapiro or something where he would let me speak and he wouldn't topic dump and he wouldn't goalpost shift and do all of that disingenuous stuff that he definitely would do, it would be so, I'd just be like, so Ben, only two genders, right? That's a fact, immutable fact of biology. And he'd be like, well, of course, obviously. And I'd be like, cool. So that means, just go with me on this, that would mean that there are only two chromosomal orientations that humans can have, right? There can't be a third. There cannot be a third. There are only two hormonal orientations that humans can have. There cannot be a third. If there was a third, that would mean that there's not only two. It's impossible that there's a third, right? There can only be two anatomical orientations that humans can have, right? There cannot be a third option, correct? That would have to be true if there are only two genders. There cannot be a third option. And Ben Shapiro would be like, I don't know. He probably wouldn't answer the question like this. He would probably already be topic dumping and goalpost shifting, which is why I don't do debate content. But in my sketch, he'd go, yeah, of course. Yeah, there can only be two. And then I'd go, okay, Down syndrome people. That's Down syndrome people exist, right, Ben? Right? Yeah? Cool? You've seen a Down syndrome person? Yeah, they have a different chromosomal orientation than XX or XY. There are actually a lot of people that have different chromosomal orientation than XX or XY. Right there. Just boom, done. More than two. More than two. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with gender. That doesn't have anything to do with gender. Okay, Ben, what does have to do with gender? Well, you know, like what sex organs you have. Cool, so we just established only two anatomical orientations are possible, right? There cannot be three. Cannot be three. Only two, right? Well, people are born with both. People are born with both anatomical characteristics, so that's a third option right there. Done. But we would never actually get to have this fucking... We would never get to actually have the debate in that way because Ben would find a way to topic dump or speak over that. And I just don't give a shit anyway. It's such a, like, the argument is on its face so weak. It's so bad. And again, having a strong argument is not the point. That's not the point. The point is just to be like, just to talk to his audience, which again are the people from Idiocracy, and to go like, obviously, there's only two genders, right, folks? And they're all like, yeah, I think so. I think I've only ever seen two kinds of people before. I think that's right. And it's like, no, no, like just right out of the gate. Like, what a bad argument. Not even something that there's like degrees to or levels to or like, maybe this, like, just no. They're just are more than two ways that humans come, that humans show up. That's that clip where I said humans come. That could be a thing. More than two ways that humans come. That could be a reference to their anatomy too. Oh, Jesus Christ. JV just said something interesting on TikTok. I'm going to do this as the last comment, and then I'll wrap it up because the podcast has been going on for too long. I think I've made my point in this episode. This is a great episode. I think we all did a good job. Thank you for the comments. I think I crushed it. Monty, I hope you stick around and keep watching the videos. Really good comments, really good discussion. Y'all crushed it too. But JV just said, it's why they can't compromise on their position either. And that's exactly correct. It's also why you'll never see Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, any of these people ever like cede any ground and say, okay, I can see your point there. It's why having the debate would be pointless, because there never would be a moment with a conservative content creator where they would go, yeah, I guess there are more than two orientations that people can present in. And I can see that, but I still think that, being transgender is wrong because I have a religious objection to it or something, you know, something else. Like, you would never see that. And the reason why is because they're not interested in intellectual honesty. They're not interested in telling the truth. They're just interested in scoring points and keeping that grift machine working. And I think I've made that point very, very well on this podcast. I think I did it. I think we did it, everybody. I think I solved it. I think it's done. I think we don't ever need to talk about it ever again. I think I got it. I think we slam dunked it. Let's call it right there. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Get lots of my tunes over there. You can search Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music if you want to listen to my music over there. Patreon.com/AustinArcher if you want to support this show or the content that I make on TikTok or on Instagram or on YouTube. I'm making so much free content, baby. I'm churning out free content every fucking day for you guys. And if you want to support that, if you want to be a part of the reason why I'm able to keep making free content for you every single day, maybe you want to pop over to Patreon.com/AustinArcher and throw me a little bit of money. and help, you know, just on a monthly, it'd be like the same as like buying me a cup of coffee every month. And you could help this show stay alive. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Thank you so much to all of our existing patrons over there. You're the lifeblood of this show, genuinely, from the bottom of my heart. I love you so much. And I love all of you out on TikTok. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for being here. Thank you for having a lively discussion in the chat. This was really, really fun. We'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye. The less I know about